Well, hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Great to be with you. I love this time of the year, and you know that because I talk about it all the time. So very excited. Went running this morning. It was actually light outside. Praise the Lord. But here I am at work because occasionally I have to work. It's very sad. So Martha's looking at me. She has to work too. But, you know, not too hard because she works for me. So anyway,
I work hard.
She does work hard. She works hard, especially when I foist on her things that I don't want to do.
That does happen occasionally.
It does happen when I'm like, wow, I hate doing this, Martha. I'm going to put this on your schedule. But no, we've got a great show today for you. Very excited about it. Later on in the show, our inbox, we're going to have Doug Tharp here answering a question on when is it okay to start dating after being widowed? So Doug was widowed at the age of about 22 or 23. So he's got some great insight on that. And then we have my boss. I have to stick him on here once in a while, you know, so that I get a good review. But Greg Smalley is with us with his wife, Erin, to talk about planning your marriage as opposed to just planning your wedding. So hopefully you all have a clue about that and know that that is an important thing to do because no one cares about that fondue pot that you have. So but they do care about where your marriage is going. So that will be great coming up. But right now I have a group of fine folks here with me in the studio, and our topic today is going to be kind of fun because we're going to talk about lists going into marriage. And we all know that you guys have written lists in the past. I have heard from people who have said, I wrote a list of 45 things and I prayed over them every day and I got every single one of them in my spouse. Whatever. My goodness. So we have those people, and then we have people that are like, I had three things on my list and I just threw it out because, you know, whatever, it didn't matter. I got something totally different. So we'll talk about both of those extremes as well as our own experiences in creating lists and then understanding what we ultimately trusted God for and what he provided and how maybe it was something that we needed that we didn't know. So here at the table with me is Martha. Hey, Martha.
Hi, Lisa.
Where's your list? You should have it in front of you.
I should.
Martha is high detail. She has her list. I know she does. She probably memorized it, so it's all in her head. Exactly. We have Jackson Dunn with us. Jackson, welcome.
Thank you very much.
The sole guy representing lists.
I am the token guy. Thank you for letting me be here.
We appreciate you being here. And Dr. Julie Slattery is with us. Julie, welcome.
Good to be with you. I'm used to being the token woman, so this is kind of nice to put Jackson in the seat.
Exactly. And we appreciate you strolling down the corridor from the other studio where you record the Focus on the Family Daily broadcast.
It was a long, hard walk.
Well, it was, and we figured it was time for you to move up in the world and do the Boundless Show.
Thank you. I've been wanting that for years.
Been promoted.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know you'll still go and help the Daily out once in a while, but you have now arrived, so that is good. So let's jump right into the topic at hand, the topic of lists. And the question I want to know is, let's just start out talking about, did y'all have some kind of arbitrary list when it came to looking at Julie and Jackson both married? Martha and I are still working off our lists. So did you have some kind of list from the get-go or at any point in your life leading into marriage? And what did that list look like?
Yeah. Did you have a list, Jackson?
You know, I had one in my head. I didn't have this typed out, written out. You know, I'm looking at this every day. You know, from an early age, I felt this kind of call to ministry. And I didn't really know what that was. But as I was thinking through, you know, what am I looking for in a spouse? You know, there really were a few core things for me. You know, whether they're called to ministry or are they open to someone who is figuring out a full-time ministry type thing? Are they a caring, gentle, sweet, sensitive person? You know, some of the kind of personality pieces of that. So I wouldn't say I had a real extensive ideal there, but I had a few things where as I was getting to know people in college, and I don't know, I think the normal thing is to put people through a filter. Mm-hmm. Could they be my friend? Could I date them? Could I marry them? You know, that type of thing. As I think back on this, there were several people that I would meet where I would almost, they'd immediately fall into this, oh, we're going to be great friends. But there just something about this, what I had in my head of what I was looking for would almost naturally sometimes kind of help me with that filter. Mm-hmm. And as we may talk a little bit later, once I did meet someone who I was very interested in, that list kind of really came to bear with that.
Mm-hmm. I noticed you didn't have anything like drop dead gorgeous on the list.
I think
well,
that's a given.
Sweet, that's that, a given.
I mean, is the physical part for, you know, yeah. I think that's kind of the,
that's
unwritten,
the unwritten rule.
Yeah.
Rule.
Mm-hmm. So. But I just wanted to call you out on that.
Caring, sweet, and gentle, Jackson and I already, right there, we wouldn't have dated. He would have written me off right there. So,
she'll be
so
a great
much
friend.
For that.
Yeah. Lisa yeah, exactly. would have been my great friend.
I would have been,
I loved hanging out
I
with and
friend
doing
zoned
cool stuff
right away.
With, so,
rude.
Yeah.
Okay, Julie, what about you?
Well, I had a pretty extensive list. I don't think I wrote one down, maybe when I was 13 at summer camp. But in my head, I think it was almost more of a script that I was kind of trained to have, even in my family. Like, people would say, oh, we know what kind of guy Julie will marry. She's going to marry some, you know, superstar, hard-charging, type A person, because that's who I am. And I really thought, all right, this guy's going to be, a super pastor or a doctor or, you know, educated and competitive and driven, because that's kind of what my parents always pictured me as marrying. Mm-hmm. And that's the way my dad is. And I just thought, hey, that's going to be the guy. And then, of course, there were the criteria that are really essential, like, yeah, being a Christian, being a man, mm-hmm. you know, walking with the Lord, you know, that
right
sort
there.
Of thing. But yeah. But as my story will unfold in a little bit, my list didn't really come true.
No. That's good. What's on your list, Martha?
Well, when I was a student at the Focus on the Family Institute, I guess Focus Leadership Institute now, they actually had us in the marriage class write down some traits, and they gave us scriptures to kind of read about a person of high character, and that was part of your list. And then we also studied our personalities of what you thought would fit well with your personality. So that was, I think, when I was about 22 in college that we put that together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my list was kind of born out of what others' expectations have been for me. And so I've kind of tried to tweak it in my head over the years, because obviously I still haven't found that person. But yeah, it was very much people would always say, oh, Lisa, you'll definitely need da 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 da. You're definitely going to have to marry someone who has this or who this, or you're a very strong personality, or you're whatever. So I think Julie and I are kind of in the same camp of people pigeonholing me as to, you know, well, you'll obviously need this because of this. And I'm sure that has fueled kind of some of my perceptions for sure as far as that goes. So
and would you both say that, as you look at where you were pigeonholed and kind of where you either have landed with a spouse or landed with your list, that they were two opposites of as you look at what people thought and what you've seen that you've needed has been different?
Yeah, for me, definitely. And it's funny because when I was dating my husband, first thing I said after I met him, I said this to my brother, was like, that's a really fun guy to date, but I could never marry him.
Mm-hmm.
And I broke up with him a few times because he didn't fit the list, but I really liked him. The Lord had to work me out of my box a little bit.
Yeah. So let's take a look at that a little bit, because I got, Jackson, to answer your question, a lot of what I get is, well, Lisa, you're a really strong person, so you're going to need someone even stronger than you, or even more forceful of a personality, or even more, kind of what Julie's, even more of a type A or more. So, so for me to think of marrying some kind of like oil painter, you know, who's just going to be basking in sunlight or
hey,
whatever.
Hey, I married an oil painter. Be careful. No, I'm just teasing.
Nice. It's just kind of a foreign concept to me. So I want to talk a little bit about this idea of what's the difference between, it's easy for us to kind of put people into a type or to talk about whether it's stereotypes or whether it's kind of a vision of this, you know, like I said, a type of person versus the real person themselves. So when you're talking about hypotheticals, you can obviously operate in this whole other world, but eventually you get to know a real person. And that's when the rubber hits the road and you find out, oh yeah, there's probably more to this person than just how I caricatured them. So what do you think are some of the unique challenges in that, would you say, in recognizing the distinction between a type and then all of a sudden you meet someone who really is an eligible candidate for marriage, and how do you start leaping over those walls and those barriers of saying, should I really be considering this person?
Yeah, that is the huge difficulty with this whole thing. I actually talked to my wife a couple of days ago in getting ready for this, and as I've blogged a couple times about our story, I mean, I chased Krista for 18 years, some or 18 years, 18 months.
It felt like it.
It felt about like 30 years. Chased her for a very long time. Some call it stalking. I
doggedly chased.
A diligent pursuit for a common goal. And as Martha and I were talking about that, was it the list that deterred her from me, or what, or was it something else? And what's funny, I know we're only can hear my voice, but you know, her ideal was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed surfer boy from California. Mm-hmm. And I know you can't see me, but I'm a dark-haired, brown-eyed Italian from Arkansas. So there's nothing on the idyllic picture that she had. And she even said, she said, you know, I didn't have just this list, but what I did have as an ideal, mm-hmm. you were nothing. Mm-hmm. It, funny thing, too, after she moved from Seattle around 8 or 9 years old mm-hmm. To Texas. Her parents joined Mercy Ships. And she said even then when she got to Texas and heard all these accents— and she swore then as a 9-year-old, I'm never marrying anyone with an accent. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not as strong now, but when I moved from small town Arkansas to college, it was as thick as it could be as you think of a Southern accent. So even that right there, this ideal, I'm never, you know, and that really was that tension for her of I have this idyllic thing that you kind of have to have somewhere to start. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have some place, but is that really grounded in that reality, as mm-hmm. you said? So I think that is a tension, and often a tripping point. And as you saw kind of what happened with us, there was a long period of time where there seemed to be something there, but because it was so far outside of the ideal, it was a deterrent to our relationship.
Well, what I don't understand, how it's not like she grew up in Hawaii or San Diego. Where did she get this surfer dude from? There you know, aren't her, a lot of surfers well, in Seattle.
Her dad grew up on the West Coast, mm-hmm. and he's a surfer guy. Mm-hmm. You know, curly hair, brother, blonde hair.
Again, with the dads. Julie so, had
so again, I just think for and she, great relationship with her dad, and he's just an incredible man. And so mm-hmm. I just think if you've got this healthy relationship with your dad, I think it's pretty easy. If you're going to think of an ideal, whether consciously aware of it or not, mm-hmm. there's just something about that. And I think that, and so she, you know, started up growing up on the West Coast. And so there's just kind of this, and she even said, I kind of had this northerner kind of attitude about me that anything from the South was much, you know, Lisa, as we've talked about your perspective of Southern people.
Thanks for bringing that up. Okay. And we're going to get all kinds of emails.
So, no. Okay. And so, but it, there's even that aspect. So I just think from her growing up, from her family, that type of thing is where that came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think we talk about lists, but I think lists are kind of how you project something much more powerful, which is more of a story. Mm-hmm. People, I think, have an internal sense of this is what it'll be like when I fall in love. This is what it'll be like when I'm married. And this is what my husband, what's the sense of feeling that I'll have. And a lot of that does come from how you grow up and the marriage that you saw in your home, whether it was good or bad, that impacts you. And so when you're dating someone, you know, I don't think it's about pulling out this list. I think it's about almost like a gut check of, wow, this wasn't what I expected. This is not who I'm supposed to be marrying. And that can be really dangerous, in that sometimes the things that we've written a story about are not even what's best for us. Mm-hmm. They come out of even pain from the past or unrealistic expectations or desires, and it really doesn't give God the room to move.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Martha and I have talked a little bit about changing expectations and stuff as you get older, and just how, you know, what who you think you're going to marry at 22, or what you think, you know, you just think you have this smorgasbord of opportunities and people, and then, you know, it's like you hit 30 and then you're like, is there any godly guy out there who's in within 50 miles of me? Yes. You know, whatever. So Martha, what would you say as far as just understanding kind of how that shift can take place and focusing on what's really important?
Well, in high school, I was really close to my youth pastor and his wife, and babysat their kids all the time. And my family started to say, you're going to marry a youth pastor mm-hmm. someday. And with that, they're like, you know, all of the brothers-in-law in our family so far, nobody is like super funny. So you're going to marry a funny youth pastor guy. So like that was kind of my thought of what I was probably looking out for, you know, mm-hmm. when I was younger and thought that would be my destiny. But as I've gotten older, I'm just like, you know, I think someone like that might drive me crazy because mm-hmm. I'm not that way. I mean, little two opposites. Mm-hmm. But I really have appreciated that list that we made at the Institute because it really was the core stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've gone back to it even now of like, what does the Bible say that, you know, makes a person with good character? And just thinking about personalities and stuff too, I would say those core things have become more important than a person's job or their sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really key that you, if you do have a list, it's about character. And, mm-hmm. You know, when I was teaching at the Institute a few years ago, I had the class together. We made a list of what are the core things, the non-negotiable things that you want in a spouse. And, you know, they're throwing up there all kinds of things. Some of them were character, like integrity and walking with the Lord. And then some of them were things like sense of humor and a leader, and we had probably like 45 things up on the board. And I looked at the class and I said, okay, you're seriously telling me that all of these are non-negotiables? Mm-hmm. And they all nod their heads. And I said, okay, raise your hand if you have all of these. And none of them did. They were all kind of like, oh, you know. And so I think when you boil it down to those core characteristics, those are good lists. You know, things like someone who wants to learn, someone who loves the Lord, someone who receives feedback well, those sort of things that go on with you in life. But I think these lists become, we think that we're making good decisions by doing, but they become so restrictive and unrealistic.
Yeah. Well, it's like if you want to really get a picture of total ridiculousness, I tell people to just go online, like to an online dating site. And it's like my frustration that I voiced a number of times of if one more guy on his online profile says, I'm laid back, and then he's looking for someone laid back who has a sense of humor. And it's like, honestly, like that's
like
the only thing they care
coladas.
About. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, so they can sit on their porch, whatever, and drink microbrews and sit with their dog and occasionally go hunting. I'm like, honestly, that's like every guy out there. Can you please say something different about yourself? Okay. So I need to hear from you, Julie and Jackson, as to what did you get then in your marriages that you never thought you needed?
Well, I got the guy that your wife wanted. Sorry. He's a surfer from Florida. Blue eyes. He has brown hair.
You're
but
welcome.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. No.
Good thing you got him, because otherwise,
seriously,
poor Krista.
Thank you for keeping him out of the way of Krista.
I did.
That.
Jackson
really
would have still been
he's
single.
Tall, you know, Marine. But what
so
I,
everything I'm not tall, Marine,
pretty
strong,
much. Yeah, yeah.
Good looking. Yeah, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was looking for you. So, okay. You know, we just kind of traded there.
Thank you.
Yeah. But what the Lord brought in my life was someone who provided so much balance. And I love that about him when we were dating, because I was so uptight. I mean, I was just wound up really tight mm-hmm. as a young adult. And I'd be studying, you know, I was getting my doctorate degree, and he just picked me up. And we lived in Florida at the time. He just run me in the waves, you know, or he made me laugh all the time. Now, the difficult thing about that was, okay, here I am, a strong woman, you know, very goal-oriented. And as a believer, what does it look like for me to respect his leadership and for him to lead? Mm-hmm. And really, really wrestled with that and had to see how God had brought a different type of leader in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who had brought a different strength than what I had. Mm-hmm. And I had to kind of break my mold mm-hmm. instead of thinking that I could only follow someone who was stronger than I was and more driven than I was, mm-hmm. that God's leadership in my life was teaching me to slow down, teaching me to have faith, teaching me to enjoy things that normally I'd walk right past. Mm-hmm. And it was tough the first few years of marriage to really get what the Lord was doing. Mm-hmm. But now we both look back at it and we're like, on paper, we should have never gotten married. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only were our personalities opposite, our backgrounds are opposite, you know, our spiritual journeys were completely different, mm-hmm. but the Lord used this guy who's so different from me to help me grow in ways mm-hmm. that I didn't even know that I needed to grow.
What did, because I know the women are going to want to know this, what did his leadership look like? If it wasn't mm-hmm. what you thought of classically, what did that look like, and how were you convinced that he could be a leader despite a different type of personality?
Well, that's a good question. It took me a lot of time because mm-hmm. at first, you know, he's just laid back. You know, he could honestly put that on his profile. Uh-huh. But it was like, you know, we'd
wake. We prefer to say, I'm laid back.
Yeah. We'd wake up on Saturday morning and, you know, be like, okay, we need to clean the apartment. And his way of cleaning the apartment was, you know, play some video games and, you know, go back to bed and take a nap and I'll get to it later. And I'm like, would you just get your part done? I've already mm-hmm. done my part at 6 in the morning, you know. And I was like, he's not leading. He's not responsible. But where I saw leadership was that he really was getting me out of my shell. Mm. He was getting me out of my box. You know, he would say, the dishes will wait. Let's go for a walk. Let's just live life. And particularly now that we have three boys, the balance that he brings to our parenting, you know, or just to me, like the other day, I was really stressed out, just had been working really hard. And it was Friday. And he said, Julie, you are so on edge. You're so tired. He goes, you know, I hope you're all right with this, but I'm just going to hide your iPad and your computer for the weekend. Mm. So that you're not tempted to look at emails, you're not tempted to work. Hmm. And so that's how he leads me. And he's grown in that as I've recognized it and encouraged it. But instead of fighting against that or thinking, wow, he's irresponsible, I see that as God's provision for me, mm-hmm. and God leading me in ways that I need to grow.
That's good.
That's great. Such similar things even going on as I look. That's a great question. What did I get that I didn't know? You know, what's interesting, when I first got to know Krista and we were, you know, very much attracted to her and pursuing her, and then we got together and then our relationship's getting serious, you know, I used to tell people, not only does she meet the list, but I'm adding things every day. You know, I was in kind of this cloud nine of this relationship. And so, I mean, I felt like she was everything I'd ever wanted and more. And as we were talking about this, it is amazing how different Krista and I are. You do the personality assessments. You know, you do all of those things. We are not the exact opposite, but definitely at different parts of the spectrum. In many ways, as you describe yourself, of kind of that type A driven, that's kind of me. Krista's a little bit more laid back within that, introverted, you know, that type of thing, very much of an internal processor, you know, those things. So what did I get that I didn't know what I needed? I think I did not realize the power of and the influence of the differences mm-hmm. for marriage. Mm-hmm. And I'm all about non-negotiables. I'm all about finding those things that are unwavering that need to match up. So I'm not saying the whole complete opposites attract, but often they don't last. I mean, there's got to be those things that tie us together, as I'm sure with you guys have done that. And there are some of those core things for us, but that list isn't 50 long. There's a few things that bring us together and create such a strong, healthy marriage. But there's so many of those differences that have complemented. I think she's helped me get out of my shell a little bit, be a little less, you know, driven on some of those things and a little more laid back and appreciating the fact that she's introverted. We teach seminars together. She studies differently. She prepares differently. She speaks, you know, differently in the way that she approaches people. And so it's just amazing that I feel like our team as a marriage has been strengthened just as much by those differences than I think the things that confirmed to me that she was who she needed to be as a potential spouse.
Yeah.
And that's what's been amazing for me to see.
Cool. And I think kind of the unspoken thing that I'm hearing in what you guys are saying is how important the ability to deal with and work through conflict is in marriage, because with those kind of differences, you're going to have conflict. And I know, you know, it's one thing. I mean, when you're just friends with people, you can gravitate toward the people you like and that are mm-hmm. like you, and just you have all the similar interests and whatever. But when you're dealing with someone who's like, no, I'm going to play this video game right now, I'm not going to clean this apartment, or I'm not, you're going to butt heads. I mean, it's not just going to be like, oh my goodness, you're so different than I am. That's amazing.
So cute. Oh, yeah. With you, it's the remote.
I love how you drive me crazy like that. Yeah, it's so nice.
So, I mean, there need to be some like foundational marriage skills, I think, that, you know, you have to work on. So really, it's like almost, you know, invest some time in understanding how to do that and how to relate to other people, how to deal with conflict, how to communicate. And then differences are much more navigable.
Sure.
Navigable. How do you say that? Navigable?
Navigable.
Navigable.
Yeah,
navigable.
But I think there's both ends of that. There's the revelation of differences you never hardly knew existed until you get married. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's those things come up. You're going, I had no idea. But what's amazing for Chris and I, you know, we were friends for longer than I wanted to be friends. But that did allow for conflict to come up. And the amount of, as much as we fought, I mean, I'd make her cry and I'd feel so bad. And we'd... Our differences were so evident to us, but yet there was still kind of that underlying bond of pursuing that relationship. And once we did start dating, I mean, she comes from a different denominational background, the way she worships, the way she, all things, you know, within that, the realm of faith, within so many of those things that were kind of very important coming from our family backgrounds that we really had to have conflict over, dialogue over. Again, getting those things figured out, are these things that we work through that are okay, that then we pursue this marriage. Well, then all of a sudden you get on the other end of marriage, you're going, wow, we really are different. So I think what I just want people to understand is we get as much as we can figured out, we get that path laid, and we no doubt get married, you know, we're getting married and all that. But just being ready that we're going to continue to work on those differences. What I'm hoping is they're strengthening things if we've built the skills to know how to have the conflict and communication, connecting around that, and hopefully move into the line of appreciating those things instead of going, I just wish you weren't this way.
I have a quick question, though. Julie, you mentioned of how he brings balance to your life. There's a place to be thankful for that, but is there also a little bit of underlying of like, I don't really understand this, and it does kind of make me mad, but...
Oh, it didn't just kind of make me mad. Yeah, I've been married now for 17 years, so we've been walking this road for a long time. And there have definitely been times where the differences have driven me crazy. And I remember going into counseling with my husband early in our marriage, and we had a really wise counselor who gave me some advice that I've never forgotten, obviously. He said, Julie, you do everything in an order. It's A, B, C, D, E, F, all the way to Z. And Mike will start with a little F and then a little D, and then he'll go to X, and then he'll go to Y, and it doesn't make any sense to you. It's totally random. But you have to remember you're both going to end up at Z. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be patient with the process. And that was, when he first said it, I was like, no, you know, look at the alphabet, buddy. How's it supposed to go? And a lot
reach
of,
it.
And a lot of this.
So
really,
I'm preparing Martha for marriage. Okay. Her working with me is going to be like, I'm going to get some credit for that.
Are you? Okay. Because you're messing up a world a little bit. Yeah. You
know, only she can walk away from me at the end of the day. So
yeah, that's right.
We're going to have to do a camp out where really the rubber hits the road.
You guys have to share checking accounts.
Right.
Exactly.
But a lot of it for me and getting past that anger really had to do with seeing my pride. In that I really believed that the way I did it was right. Mm. And, you know, cleaning the house, it's better to clean it at 6 a.m. rather than wait till midnight. Mm. I really had that ingrained in me that my way was the right way, whether it's how we raise our children or how we eat or how much money we spend on an extension cord. I mean, these are all things that we've argued about. And when the Lord started to show me that it's not your way is right and his is wrong, but you've got a lot of pride that you need to lay down and let him just teach you. Mm. Let the Lord teach you what it is to lay that down and learn from someone else. That's when things really started to click for us and the differences became a strength rather than a weakness.
That's good. I think just that simple message, I try to always tell people, different isn't wrong. Mm-hmm. Different is different. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a choice we have to make. Do we define different as wrong or different as different?
And it's an emotional choice. You know, I can say, if you're my friend, I can respect your differences. But when you're sharing a bed and a bathroom and a checking account and children and vacation schedules, it's an emotional thing where something rises up in you and says, that's wrong, or why don't you do it my way? Mm-hmm. And that's where the Lord really wants to just use marriage to humble us and to teach us what it really looks like to be a servant lover.
Yeah.
And I think a choice within that too, Martha, is do we look at, it's really shifting from frustration to appreciation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a choice we have to make of, is it frustrating at times? But if my pride's out of the way, I see what this brings to our relationship as a whole, and really learning to at least at a surface level appreciate. What I found some of those things with Krista now over the years, I now am appreciating the things that are important to her that at one point wasn't, because I've seen, now that's taken a lot of time. And that's not an overnight thing, but I just really think those perspectives of from frustration to appreciation, we have to make that choice to try to see it in a different light as well.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and I think too, just in closing, the whole idea of put yourself in that person's shoes and recognize that, you know, if you step back and say, are they deliberately trying to undermine me? Are they deliberately trying to make me mad or try to? Probably not. You know, so if you assume that their motives are good and they are just, as Jackson said, different, you know, they're just operating in a different way and thinking differently, then you're not immediately going to run to, they know that I don't like that, and they know that that bugs me, and they're just trying to, they're so mean, and they're so whatever, you know, let's stop the crazy people, okay? So let's think the best. So, well, good thoughts, you guys. Thank you so much for being part of this discussion. I think it will be helpful. All of you out there, start throwing items from your list on our blog so we can pick them apart and find out if they're legit or not. You know I will. But no, we want you to weigh in as to, especially those of you who are married, who've walked to the other side, and kind of as you look back now, now, what really stood the test of time, and what did you realize that, wow, this is something that I didn't think I needed. So that's it. Thanks so much, you guys.